bolts that had sheared them off. Rodriguez bent over and examined the nose region, muttering to himself like a physician thumping a patient's chest during a checkup. Then we walked slowly back toward the tail, him in the lead, our tethers sliding along the safety rail. I saw it first. "What's that discoloration?" I asked, pointing. Rodriguez grunted, then took several steps toward the tail. "Hmm," he mumbled. "Looks like charring, doesn't it?" I suddenly remembered that these clouds were made of sulfuric acid. As if he could read my mind, Rodriguez said, "Can't be the sulfuric acid. It doesn't react with the cermet." "Are you sure?" I asked. He chuckled. "Don't worry about it. It can't even attack the fabric of your suit." Very reassuring, I thought. But the charred stains on the cermet skin of the gas envelope were still there. Could it be from the entry heat? I could sense him nodding inside his helmet. "Some of the heated air must have flown over the shield and singed the butt end of the envelope a little." "The sensors didn't record a temperature spike there," I said. "Might have been too small to notice. If we expand the graph, we'll probably see it."
"Is it a problem?"
"Probably not," he said. "But we ought to pressurize the envelope to make certain it doesn't leak." I felt my heart sink. "How long will that take?" He thought before answering.
"The better part of a day, I guess."
Another day lost.
"Worried about Fuchs?" he asked.
"Yes, of course."
"Well, he's likely got problems of his..." "Hey!"
The safety rail alongside Rodriguez suddenly broke away, a whole section of it flying off into the yellowy haze, taking one of his tethers with it. He was yanked off his feet, flailing his arms and legs, the remaining tether anchoring him to the still-standing section of rail, the other one trying to pull him off the ship. I lunged for him, but he was already too far away for me to reach without taking off my own tethers.
"Pull me in!"
he yelled, his voice bellowing in my earphones.
"What's happened?"
Duchamp asked sharply in my earphones. I saw him unclip the one tether from his belt. It snapped off into the clouds. I grabbed the other and began hauling him in. But the railing itself was wobbling, shaky. It was going to tear away in another few seconds, I realized.
"Pull me in!"
Rodriguez shouted again.
"What's happening out there?" Duchamp demanded.
I unclipped one of my own tethers and fastened it onto one of the cleats set into the catwalk. Then, with Duchamp jabbering in my earphones, I unclipped Rodriguez's remaining tether before the railing broke off and he went sailing into oblivion.
"What the hell are you doing?"
he yelled. His sudden weight almost tore my arms out of their sockets. Squeezing my eyes shut, I saw stars exploding against the blackness. With gritted teeth, I clumped down onto my knees and used all my strength to clamp the end of his tether to the cleat next to mine. I saw that the broken end of the railing was fluttering now, shaking loose, and my other tether was still hooked to it. Instead of trying to reach its end, I simply unsnapped it from my belt and let it flap loose, then turned back to hauling in Rodriguez's line. He was pulling himself in as hard as he could. It seemed like an hour, the two of us panting and snorting like a couple of tug-of-war contestants. But he finally planted his boots back on the catwalk. All this time, Duchamp was yelling in my earphones, "What is it? What's going on out there?"
"We're okay,"
Rodriguez gasped at last, down on his hands and knees on the catwalk. For an absurd instant, I thought he was going to pull off his helmet and kiss the metal decking.
"You saved my life, Van."
It was the first time he'd called me anything but Mr. Humphreys. It made me feel proud. Before I could reply, Rodriguez went on in a slightly sheepish tone.
"At first I thought you were going to leave me and go back to the airlock."
I stared at the blank fishbowl of his helmet.
"I wouldn't do that, Tom."
"I know,"
he said, still panting from his exertion and fear.
"Now,"
he added. Damage Assessment. Captain Duchamp and Dr. Waller were waiting for us when we came through the airlock. I could hear her demanding questions, muffled by my helmet directed at Rodriguez.
"What happened out there? What was that about the safety rail? And finally, are you all right?"
Rodriguez started to explain as I lifted my helmet off. Waller took it from my trembling hands, and I saw Marguerite hurrying up the passageway toward us. While we both worked our way out of the spacesuits, Rodriguez gave the clipped but thorough explanation of what had happened to us. Duchamp looked blazingly angry, as if somehow we had caused the trouble for ourselves. I kept glancing at Marguerite, standing behind her mother. So much alike physically. so strikingly similar in the shape of their faces, the depth of their jet-black eyes, the same height, the same curves in their figures. Yet where the captain was truculent and demanding, Marguerite looked troubled, distressed, and something else, something more. I couldn't tell what it was in her eyes. I suppose I subconsciously hoped it was concern for me. Duchamp and Rodriguez headed for the bridge. Waller went without a word back toward his cubbyhole of an infirmary, leaving Marguerite and me alone by the racks of empty spacesuits.
"Are you all right?"
she asked me. Nodding, I said, "Fine, I think." I held out my hand. "Look, I'm not even shaking anymore." She laughed, a delightful sound.
"You've earned a drink."
We went down to the galley, passing Waller's closet-sized quarters. It was empty, making me wonder where the doctor might hide himself. As we took cups of fruit juice and sat on the galley bench, I realized that I did indeed feel fine. Was it Churchill who said that coming through a brush with death concentrates the mind wonderfully? Marguerite sat beside me and took a sip of juice.
"You saved Tom's life," she said.
The look in her eyes wasn't adoring, far from it. But there was a respect in them that I'd never seen before. It felt terrifically good. Heroes are supposed to be modest, so I waggled my free hand and said merely, "I just reacted on instinct, I guess."
"Tom would have been killed if you hadn't."
"No, I don't think so. He
thinks so."
I shrugged. "He would have done the same for me." She nodded and brought the cup to her lips, her eyes never leaving mine. I had to say something, so I let my mouth work before my brain did. "Your mother doesn't seem to have a molecule of human kindness in her. I know she's the captain, but she was practically chewing Tom's guts out." Marguerite almost smiled.
"That's the way she reacts when she's frightened. She attacks."
"Frightened? Her? Of what?"
"Tom nearly got killed. Don't you think that scared her? She is human, you know, underneath the stainless steel."
"You mean she really cares about him?" Her eyes flashed.
"Do you think she's sleeping with him merely to keep him satisfied? She's not a whore, you know."
I realized that I had thought precisely that. For once in my life, I kept my mouth shut while I tried to figure out what I should say next. When the speaker in the ceiling blared, "Mr. Humphreys wanted on the bridge," Duchamp's voice. Saved by the call of duty, I thought. I sat scrunched down on the metal deck plate of the bridge between Duchamp's command chair and Rodriguez's. Willa Yates, our sensors specialist, was in the chair usually occupied by Riza, the communications tech. The four of us were staring hard at the main display screen, which showed a graph of the heat load the ship had encountered during entry into the atmosphere.
"No blip,"
Yates said with an I-told-you-so tone. She was on the plump side, moon-faced and pale-skinned, with the kind of dirty blonde hair that some people charitably call sandy.
"There was no sudden burst of heat during the entry flight," she said. "The heat shield performed as designed, and the sensors show all heat loads well below maximum allowable levels."
Duchamp scowled at her.
"Then what caused the charring on the envelope?"
"And weakened the safety railing," Rodriguez added.
Yates shrugged as if it weren't important to her.
"I haven't the faintest idea. But it wasn't the pulse of heat, I can tell you that."
She had a very proprietary attitude about the ship's sensing systems. As far as she was concerned, if her sensors didn't show a problem, no problem existed. Duchamp obviously felt otherwise. The captain looked past me toward Rodriguez.
"I suppose we'll have to go out there again and just see what those charring marks are."
Rodriguez nodded glumly.
"I suppose."
"I'll go with you," I said. Before either of them could object, I added with a pinch of bravado, "I'm an experienced hand at this, you know." Duchamp did not look amused, but Rodriguez chuckled and said,
"Right, my EVA lifesaver."
"You don't have to do that," Yates said, obviously disappointed at our obtuseness.
"If you simply pressurize the envelope, the sensors will tell us if there's a leak."
"And what if we rip the damned envelope wide open?" Duchamp snapped.
"Where are we then?"
Yates looked abashed. She didn't have to answer. We all knew where we'd be if the envelope cracked. There was a set of emergency rockets hooked to the bathysphere. In theory, it could serve as an escape pod, but none of us wanted to test that theory. The thought of all eight of us crammed into that tiny iron ball and rocketing up into orbit was far from comforting.
Inspect the charring, Duchamp said with finality. Then we can pressurize the envelope.
Maybe, Rodriguez added, morbidly,